This is the Inside Track podcast by the BVRLA. Join us as we speak to high-profile guests from across rental, leasing and fleet as they discuss their careers, react to the latest news and look at what may be coming in the future.
This episode is part of our Shine a Light mini-series, which is all about putting the spotlight on the people that make our sector a great place to work.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Inside Track podcast. Today, I say we're keeping up with the Joneses. We've got two fantastic guests. We've got Esther Jones from the AA and Rachel Jones from Auto Trader. Today, we're going to be talking about how to inspire inclusion in the workplace, specifically with the eye on the automotive industry. And I think if we kick off as we've done across the other episodes in this series, Esther, if you can say a quick potted history about who you are and what your route to your current role has been, please.
Oh, wow. So I'm Esther. I'm a commercial account manager. I've worked for the AA for 32 years, always within business services. Started doing part-time just European cover, progressed through to be a team manager. I've managed all the teams within business services, so from sales to admin to complaints. Then I thought, I'm getting a little bit bored now. I want to do something a bit more challenging. Those famous last words. I then became a commercial account manager, where I look after charge post operators, SME accounts, that's small and medium enterprise accounts, from anything from one vehicle up to 500, and large affinity and trade membership bodies. I look after all those as well. So yeah, I'm very busy flipping yes. from one thing to another.
I bet no longer bored as you once been.
No, I put it in the universe and I think that was the worst thing I think I could have done. So yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Rachel, for you, please.
Yeah, I've been in the industry for about 15 years now. I actually started at uni by learning languages. I never really knew what I wanted to do, so I just kept following what I enjoyed. And as part of my degree, I had to go abroad for a year, and I just wanted to work for an international company and use my languages. And I managed to get an internship at Nissan in Spain, in Barcelona, to start off with. So that got me into automotive in the first sense. After there, lucky enough to get another internship with Nissan in France after that. So when I came back to the UK, I then applied for their grad program and joined Nissan GB. And so that allowed me to rotate around the company. Graduate programs are amazing for kind of getting to understand a business from all different angles. So did that and then continued that at Nissan for a good few years in sales, in product management, advertising, different areas of the business, and then moved to Auto Trader about 7 years ago now. And initially, amazing leap from one manufacturer to like getting a view of the market. That was incredible, kind of being on the pulse of what trends are happening against different models, brands, pricing, whatever that might be. So at Auto Trader, I've been in looking after kind of relationships with our key strategic partners, OEMs, first of all, having joined from Nissan, and then more recently in the last couple of years with lenders, leasing companies, rental companies, and so on. So I'm now Director of Automotive Finance at Auto Trader. So kind of head up a team of people who are looking after our partnerships with those guys, and also feeding into our finance strategy overall as a business.
Fascinating. Yeah, well, equally busy, I suspect. And
absolutely.
No risk of being sat there twiddling your thumbs, similar to Esther. It's funny, just to pick up on something you just said, Rachel, in terms of getting started and not really thinking about the automotive industry, and you just sort of followed your nose, followed your interests. Do you think that's sort of a pretty common thing? Are there elements within our sector where people kind of end up here and then stay, or like, what? Yeah. How do you see that? Is it a similar path, do you think?
There are there's so many different roles you can do in automotive. I would have never known that if I hadn't have done that internship to start with, because it just gave me that entry point, you know, just to try it out, you know, no risk, 6 months, you know, see what it's like. And it was a really good way to understand. And actually what I really enjoyed was just the culture of the company, most of all. They very much focus on cross-functionality at Nissan and working across, you know, different teams working together, which I really loved myself. So having those kinds of opportunities are great ways to enable people just to try it out, just to easily get into the sector without it being a major career decision. I'm going to do this forever. But yeah, I have stayed because I have really enjoyed it. But I'm no car geek, but made amazing friends along the way. Met my husband in the industry, so it's been pretty handy.
You're definitely in now.
Yeah.
And Esther, what was sort of your route? Obviously, you've been at the AA sort of continuously for a long period and moved around internally.
Yeah.
Thinking back, what was it that sort of brought you into them specifically? Was it the sector or was it something completely different?
I think a little bit like Rachel in the way, because I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I left school, got married very young, and I just thought, I need a job. I had a young child. I thought, I just need a job and I don't really care what it is, as long as the hours suited. And there was an advert and it didn't say what it was. It was just part time. I thought, I'm going to go for that. And I got it. I think sometimes the perception when you say automotive, you think it's just cars and you're just looking after cars. And that's really not the case. So I sort of stumbled into this role. I was told it'd never be full time. You're only going to do 10 till half two. I thought that works for me. My child was young. And it just progressed. And I think because the AA was such a large organisation, I've luckily had the chance to do different bits within the same company, but the roles haven't been the same. So I'm growing as I'm going through on my journey. But I never thought I would be here 32 years ago. And it was like, I'm just need this job just for the here and now, and I'll see where it goes. There was no foresight, I'm going to be here this long. There was none of that foreplanning or anything like that at all. It was just, it suited me at that time, and it just seems to have worked out for me.
Yeah. I think one of the nice things, because we're in like a transition mode of like moving to EVs and electric vehicles in years to come, I find it amazing. So one of the grads in my team said is particularly interested in sustainability and said, well, I wanted to join automotive because that's where I think, you know, we can make a massive difference. And, you know, she's really interested in the climate crisis. So came into the sector through, you know, being passionate about that topic, which
that's
I think
something,
is brilliant.
Completely something different, isn't it?
Yeah. I thought that was great.
Yeah. And I think that completely ties in with that point on, it's not just cars, which.
Yeah.
Very few people who work in the automotive industry will solely just do stuff with cars. Like you say, there's so many roles, there's so many different pieces within it. And a lot of the roles will be that, you know, people to people, relationship, service, which are completely transferable. It's funny because thinking back to one of my previous roles at a PR agency that was specialist for automotive, you did almost get a split where there were certain male members of the team who were, you know, they could tell you anything about any car ever because they were just absolute passionate in that space. And then typically the female team members were sort of PR professionals. They did communications and then were applying it. So it's almost similar to you guys, almost you found the route just because that's where the skills were, that's where the flexibility, the culture was, as opposed to thinking, I love cars, I'll go into a car role. So completely blanket. It's a very small agency subset, but it seems to be aligning with some of those pieces that you both have said. And I guess within that and on that topic of, you know, inspiring inclusion, particularly thinking about, you know, gender split and how there is, has historically been that imbalance in the automotive sector. Within your roles, obviously you've moved with the cultures, you said they've worked for you. What have your experiences been with sort of that inclusion piece? You know, have you felt you've had to work harder to progress? Have you found you've had people or cultures that have supported you and it's just not been a factor? How's it fallen for you guys? Rachel, if you go first, please.
Yeah, of course. I think it's a tricky one because I've had quite a few different roles actually in like, and I've probably had different experiences. You know, if you work in a sales environment compared to a marketing environment, for example, different things going on there. Quite early on in my career, I went out to be a sales area manager when I was at Nissan, and that meant that I was working in looking after around 20 dealerships over a patch of the UK. You're kind of on your own going out visiting those dealerships, looking after their sales performance. So I headed into a very male dominated environment there, you know, that had worked there for years. The leadership teams were mostly all male as well, and so having meetings or walking in being the only female or even presenting information to an audience of all males, it's just different to doing that in a mixed environment. And, you know, I definitely had a perception of that and felt that a little bit. But at the same time, it does help you to grow and just, you know, you acknowledge this is, you know, how to deal with these situations or how to try and make them more inclusive or that type of thing. So So that was kind of one experience. I think generally speaking, my other thought would be around just the lack of women in senior leadership positions. I found quite challenging, particularly in my early career when I first came into the industry, because I didn't see people kind of to aspire to who mm-hmm. were doing a really great, big, important job and having family at the same time. They're just lack of was really a struggle, actually. And there's many more now. I think it is improving, but I always keep that at the back of mind for new people coming into the sector, that is really important to show progression through everywhere.
I completely agree. Esther, would you like to add anything to that from your side?
Yeah, I agree with you, Rachel, completely. So I think it's really important that you see people like you in those positions, female women in like senior leadership teams. But also I think there's an education piece here as well without realising it. Like you said, you go into a meeting, Rachel, and then you've got to make sure you're in a room full of men. It forced me to think I always have to be the best. I've always got to be on my game. And that can sort of make you tense a little bit. So then the natural you's not coming out because you're so thinking, I want to do this. I've got to prove a point. I think once you get over that, I think then you get to flourish. So it's always thinking, I'm good at what is that self-confidence. I'm good at what I'm mm-hmm. doing. I am just as good as everybody else in the room. And then you relax and then you just be yourself. But I do think it's important for women in any sort of position is to encourage women, but also to bring the men along with them as well, because we can't do it on our own. We need to have allies as well, because that man could have a daughter or his wife in exactly the same position. So I think the mentality is just women. It's not. We have to bring everybody along on the same journey. And it's an education piece as you go along. So I have had instances where I think when we had going through COVID and I've had meetings, I was new in role and I always put my camera on when I have a meeting, and obviously the name Esther Jones, or I think it was Saho at the time, they sometimes form an impression of what they're going to see when that camera goes on. And I always was the first person on. And for that instant, I could see like, oh, it's a woman. I think, I didn't know this. And it's then to show you, yes, I am a woman, but I'm quite competent in what I'm doing as well. And I think that's an education piece. That person will then go away thinking, oh, that person was really good. And we've had a meaningful conversation. She knows what she's talking about. And then it just comes down to your skill as the job that you are doing. And then the fact that you're a woman is taken out of the equation. And I think as we do this and have meetings, I think we want the men or whoever it is to go away thinking, that's not what I expected, but come away with it with a positive at the end of it.
Definitely. And you mentioned that in your sort of your potted history, you know, you first started and you took on the particular role because it worked well for you as a working mother, obviously. Yeah. So it was more about the convenience and the hours, and it wasn't, I've got a huge career and I'll be here in 20, 30 years. You got bored and then thought, okay, I want to change. I want to make more of a career of this.
Yeah.
Did you find sort of many barriers internally to make that switch from sort of the, you know, the convenient lifestyle role to the career?
I've had really good managers, and I think that's another important thing. You've got to have people who can see your potential. That's really important and actually help you along there. So I've had good and bad. But on the whole, most of my managers have been really supportive. And if I said I wanted to do something different, they will. I've still kept my core role, but they've had something else just to challenge me a little bit more. So I think the support mechanisms that I've had have, in the whole, been really good.
I think the culture of the company is a massive addition to that, isn't it? In terms of how you're made to feel, you know, day to day. On one of my first weeks at Auto Trader, when I moved over, there was somebody left at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, real senior female leader at the time. And she said, bye everyone, I'm heading off, you know, got to go and collect the kids. And I was like, blimey, that, you know, usually people slip out the back door if they, you know, leave early. And someone just said, oh no, we have a policy of leaving loudly here, you know, you know, it's absolutely fine, people get the work done. And it wasn't a real policy, you know, but it was just a known thing. But I thought, wow, that's brilliant, you know. And so I think the type of culture that you're acting in and the trust, you know, amongst all staff is really important as well.
And have either of you found, obviously with COVID, working from home, it was such a huge moment for those sort of two-ish years period, and it's changed how everybody works. What have your experience been? Has that been a positive change for that sort of flexible working around family life people with different commitments, or is it that sort of out of sight, people start wondering who's doing what? Like, what's your experience been?
Do you
want to
go first, Rachel?
Yeah, of course. I think it was definitely took time to get used to. I returned from mat leave in that year. Anybody that returned from mat leave during COVID, I put my hands up to, because it was very, very tricky. But in terms of kind of the aftermath and transitioning back, I think we've always been a fairly flexible company, but it's definitely like less people are in the office. Like, the office is empty today on a Friday, for example, but it's made us find ways of how to keep in touch and keep the culture and keep the communication going. So using new tech, like Slack was a new thing that we started using internally. It's like a public WhatsApp group, basically, to have communications and kind of sharing experiences through that. So we found different ways to communicate. The key people I like to make sure that we're staying close to and making sure they've got progression, opportunities, are the new people, anybody new joining the company, and anybody in a early careers role. Because I know for myself, I learned from sitting next to people, overhearing conversations, getting that opportunity to join a meeting off the cuff, say, oh, come along and listen to this, it'll be interesting. And we need to find those opportunities and make sure that we're kind of helping those people in early careers, I think, in particular.
I agree. I think for me, COVID was a difficult one. I thought I was happy to be at home on my own working, and I actually struggled through COVID being in that, because I realised I'm actually a quite social person. So when we had to go back in the office, I couldn't wait to go back in and have people around me, like you said, Rachel, listening to conversations. And because of where I work, I never know, that could be a different department, but they could be discussing something that's relevant to my role, and I'm picking up on that. But whereas I'm at home, I can't hear that noise going on behind me. So we're quite flexible. I think it's made it easier for a lot of men and women working to juggle life and to get that balance actually quite right. Whereas before, it was just, you know, Monday to Friday, whatever the hours you're in work, and then you cram everything into 2 days on a weekend. Whereas this way now, you can actually spread it out. And I think for organisations, there has to be an element of trust. So if you are at home Monday to Friday, if you don't go in the office, to trust that individual that they are going to be working, because they are still being paid at the end of the day. And I don't think that's been an issue for us. People at home, they like the flexibility now of going in a couple of days a week, seeing the people, but then going back home and focusing. So that flexibility, like you said about, I'm going now, I'm going at 3 o'clock. You don't even have to do that, because we know that if you do go early, then the next day you might end up working a bit later, just to balance that out, as long as the work gets done and you're there to answer calls, if that's your what you've got to do as a role, then that's fine. So I think a trust thing has come into it, and I think everybody has to trust everybody now. I think we do it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking as you were saying that, where I think we have a similar sort of culture here, where people are trusted to just do what they need to do, and how they pack that up, you know,
it's up to them, isn't it?
But then it's everybody having to buy into that, because otherwise you get into the situation where you sort of get those side glances of, oh well, they left early yesterday and again today, and they didn't look back. Like, sometimes you get that sort of gossip or that sort of that thread filtering in, if it's not universal. And if, like you mentioned earlier, if you have good leaders and bad leaders, that can really cause that split and that cultural shift, can't it? I mean, both of you obviously feel very sort of supported within the cultures you're working in. And Rachel, you mentioned how, you know, previous role at sales, it was very male dominated and it's changing. Aside from the visibility of seeing, you know, more people like you, yourselves in more senior roles, what other sort of positive changes have you seen or can you see coming in terms of just sort of leveling the playing field and helping everyone feel more included? Rachel, if you kick off again, please.
Yeah, of course. I think something that is very easy to do for any business is learn from the best and look externally. So you don't need to come up with ideas internally all the time, and working with external organisations that are, you know, absolutely specialists in the subject, and I think it's bigger than the female agenda in this sense, actually. Yeah, so like working with the Social Mobility Foundation, with Black Leaders Organization, with inclusive companies, what different parts, and actually we are members of like the 30% Automotive Club, which obviously has the purpose to encourage that gender balance and get more women into leadership positions. But going to their events, learning from them as to what we can be doing and how we can be thinking differently to attract, retain talent and that type of stuff, I think is really key to kind of help forward our own, you know, ability to be better. And the second thing I would call out is probably the networks we have in the business, or I mean, every company generally has employee networks of some sort, don't they? And we've got a vast amount of networks, really. But each of them have their own kind of formal commitments every year that they set up. They're run by employees of the company. But generally speaking, they're all about raising awareness of a topic, like better understanding of a topic, and then getting people to take action. Now, that might be a policy change, but it also might be employees acting, doing something better for the environment or whatever it might be, depending on the network. So getting those voices heard as well internally up to kind of leadership is really, I think, influential as well.
Yeah, I agree, Rachel. I think also, like you said, the networks in particular, they play a really major role, because ignorance is not a good thing. And in the workplace, you get to meet all different people, and they're actually making their views known, not in like forcing it down your neck sort of thing, but it's an education piece. Like, oh, I didn't know that. And you then have a safe space if you need to ask the questions, or you don't want to get to someone and say, look, I don't understand this, but you can have a really open conversation to know how to tackle other conversations that you may not know how to speak to somebody about. So I think that bit's really important. Those networks are really, really important, no matter what it is, whether it be like LGBTQ, carers, origins, anything like that. I think that's an important thing. And I think as individuals, we should all take an interest in it, if that's your thing, if you want to find out more, because it just makes you then a more grounded person as well, because you're learning about other people who are not like you. So then you don't judge. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and when you sort of extrapolate into, you know, what you see in wider society and in, you know, in media, and how there's much more representation of every kind of group now, I guess there is partially going to, there'll just be that generational shift where millennials are perhaps more open to diversity and inclusion than the generation before them, and then generation XYZ, whatever we're going into next. Just naturally, I think there's that greater acceptance and that cultural shift.
Yeah.
Obviously, that takes a huge amount of time to filter in. So are there any sort of quicker wins or steps that either of you would like to see or think we should be making collectively, you know, beyond your companies, which obviously have quite a welcoming culture, to the others that are maybe behind? What are those sort of initial quick steps or quick wins we could be making to get there faster?
That's a good question.
So that is a tough one. I'm trying to think. I think our outreach is like being present at it's kind of working with these third parties, but maybe, you know, going out there, putting yourselves, putting companies in places where, you know, it doesn't need to be an automotive careers event type thing. It might be a marketing event, or it might be, you know, a tech event or something like that. To get across the company culture, or, you know, something around the company, like you said earlier, Esther, you know, you can work in automotive and not love cars type of thing. There's so many different roles, aren't there, that you can get involved in. So getting out there and having lots of ways for people to join the company, whether that's internship or apprenticeship or graduate program, even mid-career, if you're thinking about a career change, there's like programs like Tech Returners, where you might have taken a career break, you might have had some time out, you know, looking after children or whatever. There's different things you can try and get people in at different levels as well to support everybody coming into the industry. So it's not always just about kind of entry point into the industry.
I think also when you come across people in your everyday life, that's another important thing as well, because I'm not, for instance, I could be going somewhere and I'm talking to somebody. Well, what do you do? Oh, I didn't know you did that. So it's like any contact you have along the way is when you speak to people what you do, they think, oh, well, you've worked there for so long, or, oh, I didn't think they did that. And I think each interaction is an important one. I mean, I'm not going around thinking, oh, I've got to speak to this person, but sometimes these conversations just happen naturally. So for me, any interaction that I have with somebody, I will discuss my journey or somebody else's journey or my daughter's journey or whatever that may be, to think things are changing. I think that's an important thing, to make sure things are changing, and it will take time, but it's actually going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's obviously very encouraging, and sort of long may that continue. And as we say, in all those strands, in all those different areas where, you know, people maybe haven't historically had a level playing field or been granted the same opportunities, I think it's great to see that that progress. I guess just as we wrap up, just one final question, and you can probably take it in one of two ways. I mean, if you had to give one piece of advice, either to a new starter, sort of, you know, coming through now, or back to yourself as a sort of, you know, a teenager or young adult just getting started, what's that sort of one piece of information, that one piece of advice that you would give? Who wants to jump in first?
Who wants to go first, Esther?
Shall I go?
Yeah, you go.
I think my thing would be is to have confidence in yourself and in your ability. I think that's the thing. And don't be put off if somebody thinks that you're not what they expect you to be. I think you have to have the confidence in yourself. And with that, you can do anything, and to have people to support you if you're having a bad day, and have that support mechanism. I think those are the two things that I would say.
Yeah, love that.
Yeah, me too. I love that. It's hard to add to, Esther. I would say, in addition to that, maybe don't worry about a specific role or job title. I feel like when I left school, everyone kept saying, what do you want to be? And I didn't know what I wanted to be. Yeah. But I enjoyed playing hockey and teamwork, and I enjoyed, you know, researching things. So I think really think about what you enjoy, whether that is teamwork or analytics or equations or, you know, research, and follow that path. Because I think it's hard, it's very difficult to try and focus on a role or a job title or something like that.
Yeah, so more should start asking people what you want to do, or, you know, what do you enjoy doing, as opposed to what you want to be.
You want to be.
I'd explore that in different industries type of thing, because there will be lots of opportunities across industries. But I think that would be it.
Well, that's fantastic, and I think we've come full circle from sort of where you started to then how new people just coming in can sort of pick up and carry it forward. And I think as we covered right at the start as well, you're both very busy, so I'll let you get off, and thank you again for your time, because it's been fascinating hearing about your journeys, your experiences, and what more is going on to sort of improve the picture and take things forward, not just within our industry, but I think beyond, just sort of
all
as a working
industry, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
But no, it's fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, and speak again soon.
Thank you for listening. Please leave a 5-star rating on your podcast platform if you enjoyed this. If you would like to join as a guest, email digital@bvrla.co.uk.